We're not sure what to think of Samsung's new foldable phone, a new UX that's magic. Tips on getting the best deals on tech this holiday season, and how many mosquitoes can you squash into a shot glass? All that and more coming up on Tech News Weekly.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 57, recorded Thursday, November 8th, 2018.
This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, a podcast from Red Hat. Listen to the epic true tales of the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels revolutionizing the technology landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit redhat.com/heroes today.
And by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and TWiT listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at brex.com/TWiT.
Welcome to Tech News Weekly. This is the show where every week we talk to the people making and breaking the tech news. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Samsung, you know Samsung, right?
I'm familiar with this little startup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Samsung held its developer conference in San Francisco yesterday. And while the event was targeted at developers, there were some real nuggets that some wonder might actually be a hint of where innovation, whatever you define that as, in smartphones might be heading. Joining us to talk about some of those announcements is David Ruddick from Android Police. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. We appreciate you taking some time for us. Let's start with a big announcement, something that Samsung has been teasing with a little breadcrumb trail for literally years at this point. We finally got a look at their upcoming foldable smartphone tablet thingy, the Infinity Flex. And we saw it very briefly on stage with the developer announcement. Were you impressed by what you saw after all this time?
I mean, so here's the thing. The way they unveiled it was very smoke and mirrors, and there's some reasons for that, I think. But at the end of the day, it's a folding phone. It's a tablet that unfolds, and then when you fold it up, there's a little screen on the outside, and that's the little phone screen. And so that's what some people had been envisioning as the folding phone concept. I guess we would call this a any folding phone as opposed to an Audi folding phone. So it's definitely interesting. They weren't heavy on details at all. They did reveal the size of the screens in a later developer presentation, but that was really it. You know, so the phone was encased in a black box, or it was gray, but they call it a black box, to hide the industrial design. And it was very, very dark in the hall. It was this Moscone, and they did not let anybody get close to it.
So this shot right here that we're seeing of the actual phone aspect, like there's mega bezel going on here. I have to imagine this is to throw people off from the actual design, right? Like the actual device wouldn't have that kind of crazy forehead on it.
Okay, so actually, yes, it will. Samsung actually published a slide in the developer presentation later that day. I think Shar Tipkin at CNET tweeted a picture of it. It's a pretty good picture showing what the device looks like uncamouflaged from a like kind of flat 2D drawing perspective. But yeah, it's going to have like iPhone 4 size chin and forehead. They're massive. So they're actually bigger than that. So the screen on the top is actually only 4.5 inches across. It's a very small screen and it's very skinny. And the inside tablet is 7.3 inches and it's really wide. It's Samsung calls it a 4.2:3 ratio. That's some real mental math if you want to bust that out to full size, which I guess is like a 21:15 or something. It's going to have really big bezels on that little front piece of the phone. And I imagine that's because those big black areas are just filled with batteries.
Okay.
Yes, that photo there. So that gives you a really good sense of how it's going to look. And so you can see it's kind of asymmetrical too on when it's folded up. The hinge is very flat and uncurved, and then you've got the right curved side. So it is bizarre looking, just conceptually. But I think that there probably aren't many other ways they could do it at this point. And Samsung would know. They kind of, displays are their thing.
So as Jason said, this has been a long time coming. We've been hearing about this for years and years. Is it time to get excited about it yet?
I've been kind of just torturing myself mentally with this for the last 24 hours, trying to come up like, is this the next thing? Is it actually going to, is this where smartphones are going? And when you think about it, sometimes it's easy to say, well, yes, of course, because if you think about a phone that unfolds into this bigger display, think about all the things we do with our phones. We read, we watch videos, we look at photos, we play games. All of these things are generally better on a bigger screen. You know, if you want to read the news, for example, of course, you'd rather read it on a tablet than your phone if you're sitting down, probably. But imagine, you know, obviously a device, this is the marketing pitch, a device that's the best of both worlds. And you can have your phone on the go and get the information you need to. But when you want to sit down, or when you have a minute to stand around or whatever, you can unfold it, get more information on the screen, have a better viewing experience. And for certain applications like maps, for example, if you want to look at a map, a bigger screen is generally going to be better, right? Right. So it's easy to see the use cases. And I think that's something that's rare with any kind of technological innovation today. You know, whenever somebody tries to say, oh, this is the next big thing, this is new, this is what matters, it's very rare that they're able to say, well, it makes all of these things that you're doing all day on your phone already so much better. Just look at this. This makes it a little more obvious. And I think that's the argument for. I think the argument against is there are a lot of heretofore unresolved technical issues. And obviously Samsung's not talking about those. So I think that's really the question of, can these hurdles be reasonably overcome? Samsung obviously wants to think us to think that they've done it and that we're finally there. Whether we are, I think that's, there are just so many questions remaining.
I will say that I appreciate that Samsung did. I don't know if this is Innie or Audi. I guess it depends on whether we're talking about tablet first or phone first. But I appreciate that Samsung put the tablet on the inside so it folds up like a book with a phone on the outside versus what we saw just a couple of days before the Royal FlexPi, which is basically the tablet on the outside, which you end up seeing the kind of big around the edge fold of the screen. Just looks a little kookier, I guess, by comparison. But Google's in on this, right? Google announced Android API support for foldable phones. Apparently, Google thinks this is a trend that we're going to see a lot more of.
I think that Google is probably trying to... I don't get the sense that what Google's done is actually very important at the end of the day in terms of the API support. I think they're just trying to make sure that Android apps reflow in a graceful way. But quite honestly, this is something that they can be solving on Chrome OS, you know, apps when they resize, you know, removing Windows and everything. This isn't a huge problem that I think requires a major announcement from Google, but I think they dislike the idea. And I mean, if I was a designer, probably you'd probably just think this is really cool. I get to, what would a, you know, a foldable screen, you know, UX be? You know, how should the app flow when the device moves? I'm sure it's a very interesting problem to solve. I just don't think from a user experience perspective, it really matters very much. And I don't think it's probably going to be a big issue. So I think Google's cooperation is mostly because they were able to come up with an answer and also because the solution doesn't really seem all that complicated. It's a little tiny piece of the puzzle.
Sure.
When I first heard foldable phones, I assumed we'd be able to fold them like origami style into the shape of a bird. Is that going to happen?
I don't know. Well, I mean, because on Westworld, you know, like those phones fold up in all kinds of crazy ways. Like, I think that's what everybody actually wants. They want the, you know, the full Westworld phone. I think that they did show off in the presentation there, you know, there's always a timeline. And so on the timeline, at the end of the timeline is the phone that just straight up rolls up like a newspaper, which that doesn't sound like it'd be very cool to keep in your pocket, but yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. More stuff in Westworld. That's what I
would. Yeah, I think we need Westworld as our world.
You've never even seen
No, I've never seen it. I could be destroying us all with that comment. So that wasn't all that Samsung showed off. We've all heard of TouchWiz. And I know, Megan, you spent some part of your life living with TouchWiz on your Samsung phone.
I did. I never called it that. But yes, back in the Galaxy S2.
Yeah. Okay. That would be solid TouchWiz time. Anyways, they're doing a new UI redux. They went from TouchWiz to the Samsung Experience, which is what we see now, and then the One UI. And you actually got some hands-on time with the One UI. What did you think?
Yeah, so One UI is probably – this is the biggest overhaul to TouchWiz since I would say the jump to Samsung Experience, the first jump, which was the Galaxy S8, I think, right?
Yeah, 7 or 8 right around there,
That was the jump from like – I guess like that was the like Nature UX before that or whatever. I think the Galaxy S4 or 5 was Nature UX. They got rid of TouchWiz and everybody's like, oh, it's TouchWiz. Like Samsung's like, it's TouchWiz Nature UX. And everybody's like, so it's TouchWiz. Anyway, everybody's always going to call it TouchWiz. So newest TouchWiz is called One UI. And what they've really changed is, so what I've always noticed about Samsung phones, especially since they went to using all glass everything, you have to reach up so far on the top of that phone to get to any of your needed functions and most of the apps. They're all tab-based, and you have to tap on the tab that's up at the top of the screen. It's actually pretty annoying, and when the phones are so big and fragile, it always makes you feel like you're going to drop your phone when you're using with one hand.
Yeah, it does.
So one of the huge, basically, motivations in One UI has been going to a one-handed experience by improving reachability. So navigation for a lot of apps is moving down to the bottom of the screen or toward the center of the screen, so it's easily accessible for your thumb. I think this is obvious. I think it's also where Android has been going, courtesy of Google and, you know, what's changing in Pi and what's been changing in Google's apps with the new material design guidelines. But I think Samsung's take on it is definitely a little bit different. It's obviously got their aesthetic, which take it or leave it. And, you know, it's nice. I think it is going to be a huge improvement in usability, and it's nice to see that. I think the other cool thing they've done is visually, they've introduce a system-wide night theme, and I think that is awesome. And I think Google has slowly tried to do this with its own, you know, version of Android with stock Android, but they've just been kind of they've really been struggling to get the disparate Google app teams to come up with night themes for their services. Whereas at Samsung, you know, it's the core UX team develops all these apps, so they're like, all right, give them all dark modes now. And so, of course, you know, we tried out the beta on the phones, and all of the included apps have a dark mode when you turn the night theme on. And as we know, black on these OLED screens uses less power.
Yeah.
So if you run a night theme all the time, your phone will actually get better battery life.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look forward to, and certainly answering the calls of a lot of people. Like you said, for years, people have been asking for like a system-wide night theme, not just on Samsung phones, but on all phones. And then finally, Samsung has been, I would say, very notable in its holding out of the participating in the notch wars. But that looks, by all accounts anyways, from the stage, it looks like things are about to change there. Is Samsung going to get into the notch phase? Is that happening soon?
Well, so they got on stage, their display, one of their display executives, and showed off these four display concepts. One is shaped like a U, one is very weirdly shaped like a blocky V, and one is actually a circular cutout in the middle of the screen for a camera, and then one of them doesn't have any notches at all. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's one of the ones where they're going to try to do the cameras under the screen, which would be really cool if they can make that work. I think the notches are supposed to be small. I think that's clearly the design initiative there. I think they're just as ugly as every other notch. I think the circular cutout might be kind of cool for like a minute, and then I bet it would get really annoying every time you watched a video. But yeah, the other ones are notches. And so Samsung could do a notch display for the S10, maybe. I mean, I haven't seen any renders of the Galaxy S10 yet, and I don't think really anybody's heard too much about it. So I'm sure we'll know soon enough.
Yeah, and maybe they'll don't think that they've gotten rid of the headphone jack yet either, right? Like they still have the headphone jack on the 9.
So you never know.
They might do the notch of the headphone jack at the same device upset people.
That would be cause for concern.
Yes, it would. David Ruddick from Android Police, thank you so much for hopping on and telling us all about Samsung's big announcements. Where do you want people to follow your work online?
Well, on AndroidPolice.com, of course. And if you're on Twitter, you can listen to me rant about things. It's RDRV3. I made it easier for everybody attentioning.
That is actually easier, by the way. So thank you, man. We'll talk to you soon, David.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Coming up, we talked to Adrian Westaway from a company called Special Projects about a magical new UI for the phone. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, an original podcast for geeks by geeks from Red Hat, an open source company that's been bringing open source technologies to the enterprise for 25 years. What is a Command Line Hero? They're developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels who are revolutionizing the technology landscape. Command Line Heroes is hosted by Saran Yitbarik, a developer who founded CodeNewbie and lives and breathes open source software. Season 2 of Command Line Heroes is all about living on the command line and tracking the changes that shape the world from open source development, from programming languages, to learning about supercomputers, hybrid clouds, and so much more. On the latest episode, hear how DevSecOps teams bring heroes together for better security. Bad security and reliability practices can lead to outages that affect millions. Discovering one vulnerability per month used to be the norm. Now software development moves quickly thanks to agile processes and DevOps teams. Vincent Danen shares how that's led to a drastic increase in what's considered a vulnerability. Jesse Robbins, the former master of disaster at Amazon, explains how companies prepare for catastrophic breakdowns and breaches. And Josh Bressers, head of product security at Elastic, looks to the future of security in tech. Visit redhat.com/heroes to check it out today. Subscribe to Command Line Heroes wherever you get your podcasts. And then visit redhat.com/heroes for extras and to learn more. That's redhat.com/heroes. And we thank Command Line Heroes from Red Hat for their support.
So we've all become so accustomed to the way that our phones work, the way it is now, that it can be a bit of a challenge to think outside of the black slab that we're used to. Innovation works in mysterious ways. Sometimes instead of recreating the wheel, taking a look at the systems we take for granted can actually lead to radical shifts in how we think about how we could interact with technology in new and different ways, such as the case with a concept design called Magic UX, created by the folks at Special Projects. And joining us to talk about this concept is experienced designer Adrian Westaway. Welcome to the show, Adrian. We appreciate it.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. So I first saw this concept kind of bouncing around last week, and people were passing it, you know, writing a lot of articles about it and everything. And in some ways, it's very similar to what we're used to in like in everyday real life. And in other ways, it's a, like I said, a radical shift in the way we use our smartphones. So why don't we begin with what wasn't working, what isn't working in the ways that we use smartphone UX currently? How is it failing?
Yeah, well, I mean, things are like improving, you know, all the time. But one thing that really kind of bugged me and bugged us at the studio was when you're kind of when you find yourself at a time when you've got a small screen, so you know you're not at your computer, and you suddenly need to do something that maybe involves several different parts of an app or several different apps. So I don't know, maybe you're on the train and you've got like a PDF and you kind of need to copy and paste bits of it into an email, and you're kind of maybe doing some research, or, you know, even little things like when you're trying to book a flight and you're kind of looking at all these options and you have to kind of compare them. And it seemed to us that the it was almost like the space between the apps hadn't really been considered. It was almost like, you know, once you're in an app, everything's great and everything's wonderful and nicely controlled. But it was that movement from one app to another and what happens in that gap between them that felt really inefficient. And I mainly, you know, I guess like the biggest example is just, you know, copying and pasting bits of text or images and kind of moving them from one place to another. You almost kind of had to devote so much attention, you know, which would distract you from the task you're actually trying to do, just thinking about how you switch from one place to another. And we started just exploring ways of making that action more fluid. But that's really the kind of thing that was bugging us the most.
Mm-hmm. And then of course we're showing video right now, sure, kind of what this has led to. Kind of set up the kind of destination. Then out of that thinking came Magic UX, your concept design, and kind of explain a little bit around how that kind of interacts with the physical world into the digital world.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the idea really simply is that when you're kind of working with, you know, pen and paper or physical kind of things, you would lay them out on your desk in front of you, and just to move from one thing to another, you wouldn't even think about it. You would just kind of look over here, look over there, look over there. It's just really, really easy. You don't even have to think. And we just thought, well, could we kind of mimic that behavior and enable you to kind of switch between things by actually moving your device to different places? So very simply, the invention allows you to kind of assign apps to certain spaces. And by moving the device to those different spaces, it will bring those apps into focus and kind of giving you that same sort of feeling that you would get in the physical world.
So how is it? It looks a little bit like augmented reality. How is it different than just the augmented reality that we're starting to get used to?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely. When you kind of look at like a lot of the AR kind of, so when you also in VR as well, when you kind of look at operating systems that are existing in VR headsets, you know, in a similar way, they kind of map things out around you. And this is really just taking this sort of idea, but making it work on a very, very small screen that kind of isn't in front of you all the time. So with AR, you would kind of be looking through and kind of, you know, seeing almost looking through the phone, whereas here we're kind of just moving the phone to different places to bring it up. But in essence, it's very, very similar. Yeah.
I'm very interested in the idea of, you know, that physical items do occupy their own space, and we're very used to that. Like you said, if you set a piece of paper over here, you're used to kind of moving over to that space. Smartphones, on the other hand, we're very used to the fact that everything exists inside of this little window, and we, you know, the way we do anything with it is with our fingers instead of actual movement. And it sounds like you have this running, I think you said in before the interview, you have this running on an iPhone. So in use, is that motion, like, do you find that it actually helps? Does it speed up your workflow? Could it possibly be a distraction away from how people are using their phone?
It's a really good point. And like, because we put it online, you know, we've been able to sort of accelerate the feedback by kind of, you know, getting lots of comments and stuff. And I mean, obviously, I think if you take it too literally and kind of imagine these kind of big jerky movements, that actually doesn't necessarily feel like an improvement. Right. But we imagine this being used only in specific circumstances when it needs to be used. So, you know, if you're kind of just in one app and only using one app and you don't need to kind of be interacting with other ones, then we don't imagine this system being active. It would only be kind of initiated at the right moment. So I think certainly in those moments, like, for example, moving information between documents or kind of planning an appointment, you know, I think there's a video we've got online where you're kind of emailing someone and trying to find some space in your calendar and then find a place to meet. In those circumstances, it absolutely does save time and hopefully it makes that experience much more delightful.
How do you imagine that it would be initiated?
Yeah, well, so there are various ways, and so we have actually filed a patent on this. And the great thing about patents is it really forces you to think of like every possible use of the technology. And so in the video, to make things really simple, we've kind of demonstrated it, that showing that a user would actually kind of pin these apps to a certain space to actually enable it. But there's no reason why they couldn't be automatically brought up around the app that you're using based on what you're doing. So, for example, maybe when I open my email, I've got a workflow set up that always has my calculator to one side and my calendar to the other. But also going a little bit further than that, they could be sort of initiated based on geographic locations. So, for example, I could arrive at my actual like WeWork desk, and then certain apps are laid out in the way that I want them to be in that place. So there are various ways you could kind of get into it. And we kind of chose for the video anyway, just to show the really simple one so people would understand the core concept.
So if I was like laying in my bed, then Twitter and Netflix would show up. But if I was in the office, it would be Google News. Got it.
Exactly. And so like these could either be like initiated from a location or from potentially contact with another device. So maybe, you know, you could, in theory, tap it onto a smart TV and have other information appearing around it too. So yeah, like we don't show all those things in the kind of concept, but in the patent, there's a lot of scope for other uses.
Maybe you have RFID in your pillow. Well, I'm assuming you probably do, Megan. You're all into the IoT stuff, so that would make sense. So you have this running on an iPhone right now to kind of test out the UX and everything. Is that the platform? Like, is there something about iOS and its AR platform that makes it a good way to go? Or could you see these kind of apps hitting other platforms as well?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, in theory, we've designed this from a technical point of view to be able to work on pretty much any smartphone. Sure. And it doesn't always need to rely on the camera. The camera is useful in certain situations, but it can actually work very well with just using the accelerometers. So you don't necessarily need to rely on, you know, computationally heavy kind of processes. We always kind of imagined it in iOS as the sort of dream scenario. It just feels like that sort of motion would go well with it. But it doesn't necessarily have to live in the operating system. It could also live within an app and just that certain app's ecosystem as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like something that you would see more in Android first. It seems like you'd have to partner with Apple in order. Like, they wouldn't allow you to just have that level. You'd have to, you'd have to be on their team, as it were.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and so our demo kind of fakes certain apps to give us that feeling that we're in, like, the Mail app or we're in the kind of Picture app. But the only way to kind of get in it would be via, Google or Apple to get it into most of the OSs.
Sure. Now, have you heard from any developers? I mean, obviously, last week seems like it was a big week for this. It was being passed around and written about a lot. I'm sure that some developers have expressed interest. Thankfully, you've patented it, so you would have to be involved with this. So that's a good thing. But is anyone expressing interest in taking this from a concept to reality?
Yeah, we've had some really interesting conversations with quite a wide range of companies. So some kind of quite large tech companies and other kind of companies working on interfaces for quite specific problems, like almost like more industrial things that they're trying to solve. So we've been really excited. That's the advantage of putting stuff online and just kind of starting to talk to people. But we've had some larger tech companies and then some quite bespoke applications that we're looking at.
Well, that's pretty exciting. And then you have a whole host of other projects that you're working on. Real quick, I suppose, what's another of your favorite kind of ideas that you have posted up on your
site? That's a really tough question. But so, I mean, half our time we're working for, doing these sorts of things for other companies, and the other half of the time we're kind of coming up with them ourselves.
Sure.
And I guess my favorite one at the moment is we made a kind of calendar out of Lego bricks. It's one of those things that's quite hard to explain, but you can certainly find the video of it online. But it's a massive like wall planner. Oh, you got it. Amazing. You guys are so fast. It's called the Bit Planner, and basically the idea is that you can plan 3 months of work for a whole kind of team out of plastic bricks, like Lego bricks or any kind of bricks. And you get this wonderfully kind of tactile, physical way of planning, and it works really well in a group because planning 3 month projects is really hard to do, even on a big screen. And a lot of people always kind of go back to whiteboards and post-it notes and stuff. And so you can kind of do this in Lego, but then we've made an app which enables you to just point the phone at that calendar and it will just suck up all that information like you see in the video and then digitize it and map it onto your Google Calendar or whatever kind of digital calendar you use. So it's again, we're really excited by those sort of physical digital projects, and it's kind of trying to get the benefits of both worlds. Yeah, so you can see it now.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love it. I love it. You guys are so creative. I love what you're doing. Adrian Westaway, of course, specialprojects.studio. Is that where you want people to go to find projects and more?
That's it. Exactly. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, Adrian, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jason. Bye, Megan.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, coming up, Amazon has plans for the holidays this year. It's kind of what they do. But first of all, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups with a 5-minute online application and underwriting based on cash in your bank account. Brex can actually offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards with no personal liability required. So you can enjoy value rewards specifically tailored to modern businesses, high multipliers on services that you're spending the most on, including 7 times on rideshare, 3 times on restaurants and travel, and 2 times on the software that you buy. There is no limit on how many points you can earn, and points can be redeemed for statement credit on transactions. Exclusive offers with some of the best technology brands and services that you're already using and buying from, like AWS, Google, Salesforce, and WeWork, just to name a few. Brex underwrites your company and not you, so there's no minimum operating history, no painful paper application or personal liability even required. Brex uses the cash raised by your business to extend credit and doesn't require a credit score. It doesn't also require a social security number or a security deposit. It's powered by the Visa network. It instantly issues cards to employees, set limits, and control spend via virtual cards. And Brex offers employees instant access to online virtual credit cards with physical credit cards that are sent in the mail shortly thereafter. Every employee can have a corporate credit card with real-time limits that can be adjusted by an administrator. There's also embedded expense management software with your Brex card. You don't have to save those receipts anymore. You simply reply to a text message with a picture of your receipt, and it's automatically matched to the transaction. You also get complete statement descriptions that clearly tell you what you've actually spent on, as well as integrations with major accounting software programs, so it makes things really easy. Join the thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while doing so. Get the card free, and Twit listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity. All you have to do is go to brex.com/twit. That's Brex, B-R-E-X, brex.com/twit. And we thank Brex for their support of Tech News Weekly.
Black Friday shopping is already upon us, and today we're joined by Trevor Daugherty from 9to5 Toys to tell us his favorite deals on gifts for geeks. Thanks so much for joining us, Trevor.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Jason. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see you.
Do you have any golden rules for shopping for tech during this season?
Sure. So when it comes to Black Friday, there's just so much noise these days out there. So it's important to be aware of what deals are going to be available on Black Friday as a point of reference before we get to that crazy time where everyone's running into the doors to get their deal. It's worth weighing the differences between, you know, if you're going to go in-store or shop online, if the price is close at all, I recommend just shopping online. Just avoid all of the craziness in the store. It's worth saving yourself the time and the trouble. And of course, be sure to follow us at 9to5 Toys. We're doing all the heavy lifting, you know, ahead of time to make sure that Black Friday is as easy as possible for our readers.
So I'm already noticing like sales happening now, and sometimes I see them and I'm like, oh, that's a really good deal. But then I have this like instant voice in my head that's like, yeah, but wait. It could be better if you just wait a couple of weeks and go to Black Friday. What do you recommend around that? I mean, I guess a good deal is a good deal, but could a good deal be even better if I wait?
Sure. So two things are happening this year. Best Buy, for instance, leaked its Black Friday ad last night, and you know we were up covering the ad and choosing out the best deals. And then at the same time, it made about half of those deals available to purchase today. So if you believe what Best Buy has to say, go ahead and purchase it now. There's a few different notable Apple iPad deals, those kind of things. It may just be easiest to mark those off your list. Now, that said, obviously, we can't fully predict what's going to come down the line. So it's good to take a look at all of the Black Friday leaks ahead of time, kind of get a feel for what prices are going to be. And it is a little bit of a gamble to wait. But certainly once you get to Thursday, Friday of Thanksgiving week, you're going to want to be pulling the trigger on those deals.
Mm-hmm. I like your NanoLeaf light panels that are behind
you. I was noticing that too.
Have you seen any deals on those? Because those would be a great gift for holidays.
We would expect to see those certainly Thanksgiving week. We're on sale for Prime Day, so you can expect to see around 20% off, but I would certainly recommend it. It's a great decoration and kind of makes the space a little different than the usual thing.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So what about, I've seen some deals on refurbished stuff. There was specifically a couple days ago, you posted a deal on a refurbished HomePod. What do you think? I mean, do you recommend getting refurbished stuff? Specifically HomePods, and would you recommend getting refurbished stuff as a gift, or is that kind of putting a lot of work in the hands of the receiver having to maybe get something that might not be as good as something that's new?
Sure. So going the refurbished route can certainly save you some significant cash on Black Friday. The thing is, you got to be really smart about it. Apple is certainly the gold standard when it comes to refurbished products. You'll get a full warranty, all the original accessories. Canon does the same thing. The problems start to creep up when you look at third-party retailers on eBay or at Amazon, where maybe the details aren't quite clear on who's actually refurbishing the product and whose hands it's been in along the way. So it's important to know what the return policy is and what warranty comes with the product. You'll know for sure that if it's certainly under 90 days, that probably it's not actually refurbished by the manufacturer, but someone else has had it. So one of the things that we really try to do is be clear about that information. So if you do receive something that seems a little sketchy, you have the peace of mind of knowing you can send it back and get your money in a full return. As far as giving it for gifts, you have to be careful, obviously, as I've described. Certainly on Apple products, if there's a certain model that you have your eye on, maybe that's not going to be discounted for Black Friday. So checking out the Apple refurbished store, particularly if you're looking for a built-to-order MacBook or something like that, that's a great way to save because otherwise you're probably not going to see a deal come Black Friday.
And some of these places that you're talking about, like that's a really good tip, by the way, of not getting refurbished maybe through eBay, because I've definitely done that before and I've gotten stung on that. But if they're offering like a 30, 60 or 90 day warranty with the opportunity to pay for an extended warranty, like does that happen very often with refurbished, or do they not usually offer a much longer out if you pay a sort of warranty because, well, it's refurbished and like it's more likely that something's going to happen? I would imagine that would be a good direction to go, though, if you're actually going to give it as a gift, right?
So a lot of those third-party sellers, eBay and the like, are offering extended warranties through SquareTrade, those different services. The problem is SquareTrade never had it along the way. So you're still hoping that if it is, dysfunctional in any way, that if the original return policy isn't honored, that SquareTrade is going to take it in and say, okay, this is something we are going to cover. We'll get your money back. It's just an extra step along the way. Whereas if you're going direct from the manufacturer, there's a lot more peace of mind there. Yeah. So you've really got to weigh kind of those positives and negatives throughout the holiday season, because like you said, no one wants to open up a new iPad or refurbished iPad on Christmas Day and there's a big crack through the middle.
Yeah. That'd be depressing.
So Amazon came out last week and said they're going to be offering free shipping to everyone, which of course made me feel like, well, why do I sign up for Prime if everybody gets free shipping? Is it free fast shipping? What's the story behind that?
So this is a new thing for Amazon this year. Typically in recent years, Target, Best Buy, Walmart, and others have done away with that free shipping minimum to kind of offset Amazon's Prime membership service. So now that that has gone away, there's a lot more competition. A lack of competition, rather, between the stores, because Amazon, is now going to ship things for free. And typically, if you're buying on Black Friday, you don't need it any faster than a few business days anyways. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out from a competition perspective. It was one of the advantages that Target, Best Buy, Walmart had that has now been eliminated. Of course, they're still doing in-store promotions, which is a great way to save even further. But again, you got to weigh the positives of going in-store on Black Friday. I wouldn't recommend it, but I know a lot of people really enjoy that. To answer your question about Prime and which is a better value, certainly most of the people that read 9 to 5 Toys have Amazon Prime, and there's a lot of perks that keep coming out. So it, to me, it's one of those things where if you're shopping at Amazon regularly, most people are, I would certainly recommend getting Amazon Prime. It just takes a lot of the headaches out of purchasing, especially on Black Friday, when a number of deals will be for Prime customers only. So you need to be aware of, if you don't have a Prime membership, you may be excluded from some of the best deals at Amazon throughout Thanksgiving week.
I know Amazon, as of all the companies, Amazon is so competitive at going, oh, Walmart has this thing for this price, so we're going to price match it, and they jump right on it. And, they give you, especially if you're a Prime member, they give you every reason to order it through them and not through Walmart, just as one example. But in talking about Amazon's free shipping offer, like you're saying, the one advantage that some of the other big box retailers had was this free shipping, and now Amazon's doing that. Do you envision that as a result, like they're going to then have to do something something to maybe stand out from what Amazon is offering in order to entice people more? Like possibly Best Buy offers a product for lower than Amazon is sure. offering it because of the free shipping kind of offset. And I would imagine if that happened, Amazon would then just drop it down too. Amazon ultimately plays the best cards.
So one of the things that we've already seen so far in the Black Friday ad leaks is Target is going to be offering its Red Card members, which is kind of like Prime membership, early access to a number of deals. Okay. So that's one way that Target is offsetting that. Best Buy has its My Best Buy program, which does offer some deals earlier than for non-Best Buy members. But again, it's hard to predict. But I certainly think that in the years coming, Target, Best Buy, Walmart, as if they aren't already, are going to have to ramp up what they do to compete with Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Red Card membership at Target is free. It doesn't cost, but you also don't get all the mm-hmm. other things you get with Prime. You don't get the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Video, for example, which is totally...
Or the worth. Romanoffs.
Yeah, everybody has their thing that is totally worth Prime. So... So you guys post deals all day on various things. Where do you look to make sure that these deals are the best price and they're not? Like, how do you cut through all of the marketing stuff to find out what the real best deal is and not just something that somebody's just trying to get rid of and is actually cheaper somewhere else?
Sure. So one of the things that's great about 9to5 Toys is we've been around for quite a while at this point. So we have a backlog and history of prices and what it's been at Prime Day, what it's maybe been on a non-holiday. So we can compare prices and kind of put together our own thoughts on whether something is good or not and not depend on, well, Best Buy says that it's on sale, but really, you know, that's pretty much been the regular price for the last month or two. Probably want to avoid that or, you know, go ahead and buy it elsewhere. Experience just has a lot to do with it. We have a lot of data that we've accumulated over the years, and it really just helps us to quickly make a decision on whether or not something is of quality to share with our readers.
Nice. I have a question about something just to kind of get your take on this. Yesterday, sure. I think it was that Amazon started announcing that it was going to be mailing out its first ever holiday toy catalog. You know, those old toy, those catalogs that we were used to getting back when I was a right. kid, they were amazing. And I think I circled every single thing in the catalog and said, yes, I want all of these things, mom and dad. No prices listed, but they are showing QR codes. What is your take on this catalog? What do you think?
Well, for me, I remember getting the Toys R Us catalog when I was a kid yeah. and looking through it, circling all the things that I wanted. So sadly, with Toys R Us going away or being in its defunct state, it is kind of cool for kids that they are getting this toy catalog. Hopefully their parents give it to them. But the other thing to remember, we talked about with what Amazon's doing with free shipping and all that. This is a long-term play for them. They're starting to already look at the kids and say, hey, remember when you got the Amazon catalog when you were a kid? Just like okay. I remember getting the Toys R Us catalog, yeah. you know? So while it's a cool thing from a nostalgic standpoint, there's certainly a point to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, it was Sears when I was a young mm-hmm. kid. It was the Sears catalog. Yeah.
And so, but there's no prices in there. Like that seems to me, is that just because Amazon's constantly changing the prices?
Sure. So, one thing that a lot of retailers are doing this year are those gift guides, which kind of set the scene for what will be on sale. But it also gives consumers an incentive to visit Amazon or the other retailers on Black Friday and see what the price is going to be. Toys are very different from electronics, where as far as tech is concerned, usually the deals that you see are available at multiple retailers. Whereas toys are a little more nuanced. Maybe they're only for sale at Walmart. Maybe they're only for sale at Amazon. So it's a little bit more difficult to get a beat on what the price will be ahead of Black Friday, in addition to just kind of trying to keep the interest up until the day comes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can go to 9to5 Toys and see the regular deals. I assume you guys, I know you have a Twitter account. You could follow that. And you have a podcast also. What can people find if they subscribe to the 9to5 Toys Daily podcast?
Sure. So you can get daily on any podcast service. It's short. It's 2 to 5 minutes, just highlighting some of the best deals. Obviously, in the last couple of weeks, we've been talking more about Black Friday predictions, what you may be interested in, again, jotting down in your notes, and also giving buying advice. Sometimes it's easier to listen to someone kind of walk you through upcoming deals, whereas, you know, reading it on the site maybe isn't everybody's cup of tea. So we try to just give everyone a different option in terms of preparing for the big day. We also have a new iOS app, so we can send you notifications straight to your phone, Apple Watch, which is great for, you know, keeping up to date on those deals, maybe while you're at work or on your lunch break, whatever. So that's free. We just released that this fall, and it's a great way to stay up to date on all of the best deals that we have.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Trevor Daugherty is the senior editor at 9 to 5 Toys. He specializes in product reviews, exclusive discounts, and 9 to 5's new toy of the day. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Take care.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Have you ever wondered mm-hmm. how many mosquitoes you could squash into a small space without killing them?
No, I stopped listening at squashed because I would love to squash mosquitoes.
I have not wondered this either. Some researchers have wondered how many you could squash together.
Wow.
Researchers from the Journal of Insect Science came up with the answer. It's approximately 240 mosquitoes per every cubic centimeter. That's 7,200 living mosquitoes per 1 ounce shot glass.
That is horrific.
Do not take a shot of these mosquitoes. Gizmodo reports that scientists came up with this number in order to more efficiently ship sterile male mosquitoes all over the world. The idea is that these sterile mosquitoes would then mate with females who would then lay eggs that would never hatch, and then that would eventually eradicate the mosquito population without insecticides.
Wow. And I guess they were shipping all of these mosquitoes not condensed like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And in transit, because of the open space, I guess, they were losing a lot of mosquitoes in the process. So compacting them down, if you didn't watch the video, definitely watch, because it's kind of remarkable when you think about that tiny little space and there being 240 mosquitoes mm-hmm. that just get sandwiched down in there. And for the most part, I think they're all alive, even though it looks like how could you possibly survive that? But I don't know. I'm not a mosquito.
No, no. But bugs are naturally flexible like that. That's how they survive. Because yeah. they can, you know, it's a lesson to us. If we were more flexible, we would survive.
Oh, man. Just squash them and end of story.
Yeah.
With the mosquitoes. Not all bugs. But mosquitoes, I feel comfortable saying, just squash them.
Well, the other thing is that's actually how Samsung is going to make the foldable phone, using mosquito bodies.
So hopefully those phones don't explode and unleash the mosquitoes on
no,
you.
No, that's part of the joy.
That would be...
You open up the phone and...
Oh, the joy. Is that what you call it? That sounds like Halloween. Mm-hmm. Like, not good. Tech News Weekly records live every Thursday at 2:30 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv.
And you can subscribe to our show, All About Technology and Mosquitoes. Go to twit.tv/TNW. And if you want to tweet at me about what you would fold your phone into, I want to hear it. And I'm at Megan Maroney.
I'm at Jason Howell. Patrick DeLahanty in chat and also on the prompter poses the very valid question. How many Twit editors can you fit in a square foot? Answer that question to us, tnw@twit.tv. We want to hear your answers. Thanks to everybody, Patrick, Jammer B. Thanks to Josh. Thanks to Colleen, who was in here. Everybody who helps us do the show each and every week. And Alex, too. I don't want to forget you, Alex. I would never forget you, Alex.
We would never. None of us would ever forget you, Alex.
And thanks to you for watching. We'll see you next time. There he is. I see. I just remembered him on another episode of Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.